Yes, you are now listening to the sound. Sports Reports is ordered. Sound you haven't heard for a very long time, but you're getting it tonight.
No, you missed us.
It is I-25, and I got with me the world-renowned, the world-famous, the one and only. He was born in Texas, raised in VA. He's representing New Jeruz. Not the Tri-State, just New Jeruz. He is Mr. Logic. And he wants all y'all to know that on that stormy night in 1735, New Jersey became trendsetters again, because over there across the pond, they decided to copy the New Jersey Devil with the Loch Ness Monster. Don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
And of course, it's your unorthodox statistician. You can read the screen. I do believe in Joe Hendry. I picked Oklahoma City back in July. 2-5. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things with a liquid death in your hand. And you know what the only thing better than liquid death is? Two liquid deaths. You know what I'm saying? Let's get to it. So, Mr. Logical, I don't know if the fat lady is ready to release the pipes just yet. Oh, see, my baby out here hating. Why you hating, boo? Don't be doing that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, OKC, game five last night. Jalen Williams probably had the best game of his life. Game that only his mama knew that he was capable of. You know,
probably the best finals game since Giannis's 50 point.
It might just be, you know, which sparked a whole lot of conversation that I've been hearing all day long.
Unnecessarily, you don't have to finish the statement. He's not the finals MVP. He's had a dope ass game. Calm down. He's had a dope ass game.
I repeat, he is not. You know what I'm saying? You are grounded. You know what I'm saying? Like, look, as I go back and think about this, Game four was Indiana's chance to put this series away. You know, they had the chance to go up with the commanding 3-1 lead, you know, and they just couldn't do it. So as I was thinking about this, trying to walk it back, I was having a conversation with a couple of our hot box brethren, shout out. And I told them, I said, no, this series is over. They said, what if it goes seven? The series is over. I don't care if it goes seven. I don't care if it go nine. I don't care if it go 11. OKC is winning this series, is what I told them. And they said, well, Halliburton needs to come out and he just needs to go off for 35. I said, Halliburton can't go off for 35. Not intentionally. Like, he can get hot, like we saw against the Knicks. He had that 32, 14, and 10 or whatever it was. He had that game. But he cannot intentionally start a game and say, you know what? I'm going to listen to Mr. Logical and put y'all in my backpack. He can't do that, Mr. Logical.
Depends on how he gets his points. And that's the difference. If he comes out and he goes, you know, 3-for-5 from three in the first quarter, well, Oklahoma City doesn't really have to change their defense. It's like, more likely, he's not going to keep shooting 60% from three throughout the game. But there was a play in game four where I thought they were going to go back to it, and they didn't go back to it. It was simple pick and roll, and Tyrese just took it all the way to the cup. And I think the score was kind of in balance. It was probably like maybe – I think that was after OKC had taken the lead by like one, and then Tyrese came down and hit the layup. And then SGA came down and hit the jump shot. I figured he would come right back with that pick and roll because it was so effective. Because even though Chet Holmgren is 7'2", they like to put him in the pick and roll because, you know, you can put a body on him. He's a little clumsy. Like, you can kind of beat him off the dribble. But if you get him on your shoulder, you could bump him, knock him off his balance. Then he has to go through you to get the foul. But he's been getting knocked around so much, I figured they would go back to that pick and roll. They never did. Right. But if he's getting the pick, if he's getting action at the rim, then he can kick the ball out. But if he's just, like I said, if he's shooting seven or eight threes And, you know, he starts off 3 for 5 and then he goes 0 for 3 in the second quarter. That changes the way he plays. But if he's attacking the rim, then, yeah, he can go off like that game he had against the Knicks. That was like the first time in history someone had a 30-point triple-double with like 12 assists and no turnovers or some crazy stat. But that game, he was everywhere.
Right.
He was at the rim. He was obviously he was getting the rebounds. He was getting the assists. But he was getting the assists because the defense had to change because of the way he was collapsing the defense. But if he's shooting threes, yeah, let him go 3 for 5 in the first quarter. But he's not going to shoot 60% for 4 quarters.
Aloha, Alohi. Appreciate you. You know, so speaking of, I'm glad you went there because that brings me to the craziest stat of this whole NBA final. Lou Dort is shooting 58% from three.
Everything was like it's going in.
Like
I don't think I've seen him miss one. I watched all the games. I don't recall like he hasn't missed one in a spot where they needed a three.
Right.
He made every single one. If they needed the three to hit at that point, like Indiana either came back or Indiana was like maybe scoring a couple of possessions in a row and he got that three off, it went in. I think every single time,
whenever I think about these moments in the finals, you know, I always harp on Harrison Barnes, you know, and what, you know, all he needed to do, the Waffle House, all he needed to do was hit 40%, barely, like 38. If he would have did Jason Tatum numbers, Golden State would have held on to that 3-1
lead. If he would have gone 3 for 10 in that game 7, Steph would have 5 rings.
Yes.
If not more.
So Lou Dort is the Harrison Barnes, figuratively, of this series of we're just going to leave you open. We're going to let you shoot. You can have all the shots that you want. And he said, okay, I'll take him. And let me take it from here and help us win this championship. But then you got Nick Anderson, Ben Mathurin, on the other side.
He has the yips because yesterday he missed the first free throw, right? He walked up to the ref. The ref gave him the ball. He did like 4 or 5 between the leg dribbles and then missed the second one. It's in his head.
And that's why
he might not hit another good shot for the rest of the series.
And that's why, you know, somebody asked me the other day, you know, you don't think that OKC's youth is going to play a part in this? And I said, no, that shit was 2 series ago. You know what I'm saying? They've won 3 series in these playoffs. They're not young anymore. That was last year. You know, they're here now. They're seasoned now.
And they're playing against a young team. I think Miles Turner is the only, like, vet.
That's like over 25, and I think he's 26.
I think everybody else is pretty much, you know, barely able to rent a car. Siakam's probably your oldest guy.
And that's the thing about it is that when you just look at this series in a vacuum, just put it in a vacuum for a second, we're about 3 minutes away from a sweep. You know, so you go back to game 1, you know, Halliburton hits the shot with 0.3 left. You know, you go to game 3 when Indiana went up 2-1. That was McConnell and Mathurin went off for about 25 points in 22 minutes. You know, like you take away those two, I don't want to call them flukes, but those two things that don't happen that regularly.
Anomalies.
Anomalies. That's a good word. The anomalies. Yeah. If you go to those two anomalies, we're looking at a sweep. We're talking about the NBA draft, which is next Thursday, by the way. You know, we're talking about the offseason, which we just had a trade the other day and got another one coming soon. So this series is not – it's close in score, but it's not really close.
But it's been great basketball. Like I heard a stat the other day, and I told you about it yesterday. Game 3 had 15 lead changes between OKC and Indiana. Dallas, Boston last year had 13 lead changes for the series. It was a 5-game series. It was 13 lead changes. They had 15 in the game 3. Game 4, like I said, they put the extender out there. Listen, I don't buy into conspiracies, but it does seem like Scott Foster's does seem to pop up in weird spots. It's like Forrest Gump, where he's had everything important. It seems like it's a lot of because he did the same thing in the Knicks Pacers series when the Pacers could have gone up 3-1. all of a sudden the Knicks claw back and Carl Anthony Towns having the game of his life. But of course, those shots still got to fall. Game five, I thought was repped perfectly. It didn't really mess up the flow. And that's what I felt like. Like, I didn't feel like Scott Foster and his crew, like, did Adam Silver a favor by extending the series. I just felt like the foul calls that they were calling were more in line with the regular season. I saw a clip a few days ago. LeBron was talking to Steve Nash, and he was talking about how you can tell in the playoffs you can be more physical defensively. And LeBron's like, if you're gonna call it one way for 82 games and then say, all right, for the next 2 months, have at it. He was like, well, at least the last 10, 15 games, start calling it that way. So guys can get in their rhythm, get in the understanding, like, what, you know, what I can get away with. Because you're still, people are clawing for playoff spots because those are like those playoff kind of game atmospheres anyway. So I felt like game four was officiated a lot like a game from December and not a game in June, whereas game five, I felt like they got back to, all right, this is a physical series. These guys are literally playing for a world championship. Shout out to Noah Lyles, world champion of what?
Well, it just doesn't make sense because OKC is the better team by a country mile. And if the things that were happening, that people are saying are happening, were happening, it would favor Indiana because it's the lesser team that needs that stuff to remain.
Indiana, like, they're the Pacers. They run. I think I saw a lot of foul calls in game four where I think that should have been a play on. You should have let that rebound go and let the Pacers run, but the guy got bumped on the rebound. I saw one foul. Siakam was coming to play. I don't know who was coming to the top. I think maybe it was like Jalen Williams, and he had like his hand on like both biceps. Like, he just kind of grabbed him to kind of position himself as they were like walking up the court. They called that foul. It just was like like weird fouls like that were called, which messes up the flow for OKC because they probably could have gotten some action right there. But now it's like, all right, side out of bounds, calling a new play, new sub. Let's bring Obi Toppin in. Like, so it's like, it just kind of messed it slowed up the dynamic that. And then ultimately, like I said, you know, you still got to hit the shot, you still got to execute. But I just felt like the rest of the games allow for the pace to be dictated by the players and not the calls.
I did learn a very valuable lesson during this series. I figured out why I'm not a head coach. It's because I try to do things right the first time. Why did it take? Because I know there's adjustments. Everybody talks about halftime adjustments, game-to-game adjustments. Why did it take Mark Daigneault 5 games to decide I should use SGA and J-Dub on screens together? Why did it take him 5 games to figure that out?
Because it took him a couple games to realize that picking up SGA 94 feet was tiring him out. So that took a couple of games right there.
Saying, like when I think about NBA, like just in a vacuum, right? I think about Kobe and Shaq. I think about Garnett and Pierce. I think about LeBron and Kyrie. Like, your two best players on the team should make the defense have to make decisions. So they were bailing Indiana out.
If you have Nesmith and Nembhard on the floor, I think you're equally as confident with both of them defending either player.
But Indiana, I'm talking about from the OKC side, though.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So it's like for OKC, it's like, well, they're going to switch it anyway. I really think that it's looking at it like, okay, SGA looked pretty gassed at the end of game three. Most of them did. So it's like, you know what? Let's just take the ball out of his hands. Similar to what Indiana did last night for Haliburton with the calf. It's like, all right, let's have somebody else bring the ball up. And now when you put him in the pick and roll, but those guys were just hitting shots that, like, some of J-Dub's shots last night, like that high off the top of the glass AI Kyrie floaters, he hit like 3 or 4 of those. And it was
I know there's a very huge height differential in these two players that I'm about to bring up, but J-Dub last night is what I think people think they see when they see Ja Morant. you know, what he was doing last night, just getting to the basket at will, the finishing, you know, the determination to get there, you know, and you know, the other thing that stood out to me about this series is that SGA leads the series in blocks. You know, J-Dub, he's averaging 26 points. So when people are talking about him as finals MVP, like, I understand to a certain degree why they're saying it. He had the Heisman moment, if you will, last night.
Yeah, prisoner of the moment.
You know what I mean? But you got to figure out that SGA had 38 in game one that it took Halliburton's shot to beat. You know, I mentioned the blocks. He has more steals than J-Dub. You know, even though I would say, if you asked me straight up, I would say J-Dub is the better defender. You know, but SGA is the one actually doing it on the court. And you know, and back to the referees for a second, you know, everybody thinks that SGA just has them in the bag. Those same people probably need to go get a closer look at Chet Holmgren, because he's been getting his ass whooped this whole series, just up and down the court, whether he's on offense, whether he's on defense, he's flying somewhere, he's getting knocked down another place. You got Neesmith jumping over his back for a putback.
Yeah, he's not fleshy enough for to be setting these screens up top. Because every time somebody's knee is hitting his thigh, it just, you should just use Hardenstein as your screen guy, because they're, I think when they see Chet, they just run, not through him, but it's a little bit more elbows and knees when they're like, because he's so tall. I seen him take a knee off the shin. I seen him take elbows to the ribs. Just Because
Miles Turner has been out there ragdolling him like Habib used to, like he did.
Well, if Miles Turner could get in the post, I saw another play in game three where Miles Turner got, you know, he had a couple of dribbles, hop step, and on that hop step, he bumped Chet, and Chet went from like under the hoop to like past the restricted line just off that bump. It wasn't even like an aggressive bump. It was like you're dribbling, hop step, boom. And it was like, Turner just was at the rim by himself. I'm like, okay, you got to exploit that. But Turner's been so off that you can't give him the ball, because when he gets the ball and he should shoot,
right,
he passes it up. And when he does shoot, he's shooting it off to the left. It's like, yo. But even with that, they were still down two with like 8 minutes left yesterday, which was crazy.
There's another guy for Indiana who's been having a pretty bad series that was living it up earlier in the playoffs. Nembhard.
Nembhard's been doing, like,
he's been well on defense.
Defensively, yeah.
Right. And it takes the toll offensively. So that's why when I looked at this series from the beginning, right, we both gave the Pacers like some respect on some, hey, look, they're going to win two. These are going to be close games. You know, we didn't think that OKC was just going to run them out the building. But what it ultimately came down to for me is that SGA can take over a game when necessary, like game four. He outscored Indiana 12-1 in the last 3 minutes. You know, you got J-Dub doing what he did last night. The Pacers don't have anybody that can do it as easily as they can. Like, Siakam can get hot and put up a 30-point game, but it's not going to come easy. And then we saw it last night. Remember, I was talking about when OKC played Denver. And Jokic would, or Minnesota, and Julius Randle would turn his back. And, you know, we see that, like, whenever that ball comes near Cason Wallace, you know, whenever that ball comes near Wiggins, they're in those passing lanes. It's going the other way. Caruso shooting 42% from three in this series. Indiana came into this series as the number one shooting team in the playoffs. They're down to 36%. So as 2-5 would say, Indiana then regressed to the mean.
They had a shot. Up 10, third quarter, game four at home. If they could have got that lead to 14-16, you know, and the way they've been shooting the three, maybe even like 17. But I say, if they would have got it to 16, they would have flown back to OKC up 3-1. If they would have got that
lead. All the pressure in the world.
All the pressure's on OKC. You got the MVP. He's buying Rolexes for the whole team. You got all this face of the NBA talk. I don't know. I don't really give a lot of merit to that, a lot of credence to that ideology. But you know what's on the line. You know, you went 68-14 on the season to lose to Boston, a team that has like the firepower that you have. Wouldn't have been, you know, they've been defending champs. You lose to Boston in the finals. Like, okay, we get it. These guys are tested. That would have been Tatum and Brown was probably like, that would have been their third NBA finals, 5th to 6th Eastern Conference finals, 6, something like that. So like the, you would have lost to a more tested pedigree of players. Going down 3-1 to Indiana, even though Indiana, like I said, they've been the second best team this calendar year, it would have felt like, oh, and they were the biggest underdogs as well. You know, so like I said, that fourth quarter that Shea had in game four and then the game five totality between
that's the stuff that champions are made of.
That's how you know it's over, because like I said, two games this playoffs, I was watching and it got to like the third quarter. The lead was like 16-17. I was like, all right, this is a wrap. Shut it down, going to sleep. And I woke up in Indiana and won both of those games.
Hey, they fought back last night too.
It was a game against the Knicks, and it was the first game where they won with the choke signal, whatever. And then the game one against OKC. Both of those games I turned off. So because I made that mistake by saying, oh, it's over, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say Indiana holds serve at home.
Right.
What's the game seven? And then right there, it's a coin toss. Because like I said, we've seen it to where Indiana played a terrible game, 19, 20 turnovers in game one. Granted, it took a miracle jump shot, but they still held OKC under. Even last night, when OKC had a great first quarter, their halftime score, they only had like 56 points. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like they were, I think the halftime score was like, what, 56?
It was like 57 to 43 or something like that.
57, 44, something like that. I was like, yo, OKC, yeah, they got the crowd and it looks like they were doing a lot more. I'm like, Indiana wasn't doing anything. They didn't get anything from Halliburton. And then all of a sudden, McConnell starts getting in the paint, which he seems to be
doing
at will. Like, he's taking everybody off the dribble because it's like, I don't know if they just don't expect him to do it. But he's doing the same thing. Like, he's taking Wallace to the rim, and any of the big defenders he's taking to free throw line extended, hitting a little turnaround, or you're getting the switch on the big and he's pulling up. So he can knock down those super set shots. But yeah, Turner, like Miles Turner's giving you nothing. What's going on, Mike?
Well, I think that game six, you know, taking it back to OKC, I think game six is going to look like 2013. Or 2012, whatever year I said earlier, when Miami just put the beats on OKC, I think it's going to look like that.
Just put them out of misery.
Yeah, for all those people out there, because, you know, people hate context. So, you know, for all y'all out there that's like, oh, SGA is doing what Durant and Westbrook and them couldn't do. Yeah, SGA had to go through Bron and Wade either. So think about that for a second, you know. So, but, you know, I'm here for it. You know, I picked OKC, you know, back in July, like literally the day that Hartenstein got signed.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, I picked OKC to win the title. I didn't see a reason to come off of that. So, you know, here we are. You know what I'm saying? I hope we get a game seven just for the fact that, you know, I love game sevens. But for all intents and purposes, whether it goes 7, 9, or 11, OKC is winning this series. So, Mr. Logical, over the weekend, we had the first trade of the offseason.
T-Rex.
The first trade. T-Rex, our guy. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, for those of you not in the know, you know what I'm saying? That is Desmond Bain to the Orlando Magic for KCP, Cole Anthony, number 16 in this NBA draft. Phoenix's first round pick next year, a 2028. First round pick, a 2030 first round pick, and a 2029 first round pick swap.
F them picks is what the NBA is saying right now.
Woo!
Like, all these dudes staying in NIL anyway.
I don't think just yet, Mike. Not quite yet. Like, he's on the path, but I don't think he's the face just yet.
The face of the league wears 23 and he plays in LA.
This is true. Yes. Desmond Bane, right? So I thought about this. I thought long and hard about this. I had about 75 different thoughts about this. You know, my first thought was 4 first round picks and a swap. But then as I like processed it a little bit more, just a little bit more, I said, you know what? They didn't give up Dylan Harper, you know, so they didn't give up the number 2 draft pick. They gave up number 16. Phoenix's pick, we'll see what that turns into. The rest of the picks are Orlando's picks. Orlando's going to be pretty good. And I like, you know, the trade. Like, I don't like what Memphis had to, Orlando had to give up to Memphis. But when I think about the fit of Desmond Bane going to Orlando, he fulfills a lot of their need. You know, the shooter, you know, he is tough on defense. He's not KCP, but he's tough on defense. You know, he's a 41% 3-point shooter for his career. You know, you got Jalen Suggs coming back from injury. So, you know, that's another 40% 3-point shooter, you know, with a little bit of ball handling. So I think that if you're Orlando and you get yourself, say, like a Tyus Jones type point guard to kind of run everything, initiate everything, I look at the East next year. We'll get to the Knicks in a minute, but they still don't have a head coach. You know, Jason Tatum's out. Indiana's got to sign Miles Turner. So at this point, Cleveland's in the way. If I'm Orlando, I'm sitting there, hey, if I can't finish with a top 3 seed next year, it's because Joel Embiid played a full season.
Yeah, but it takes a lot. And this is something that happens, and we talk about this a lot with these trades.
Not Darius Garland.
We see the trade. We look at the landscape of, you know, East or West, wherever you are. And people start projecting like, oh, man, you should be here because of this trade. But recently, the trades haven't really panned out the way teams have hoped.
Right.
Like, we talked about Rudy Gobert going for all those picks and all those players. I'm like, yeah, they went to 2 Western Conference Finals, but they still needed a number 1 pick overall and Anthony Edwards to come in to get him over the hump. So you still got to go get your guy. A lot of these trades, you're not getting the guy. If they would have traded and got Ja, or traded maybe got Triple J, and like maybe just kind of change the dynamic of the team, I don't think Bane does that. I think he's just a really good support role player. I don't know how him and Bankero are going to play well together. Wagner, I think it's like another good young player, and I think that'll work out. Like, I think they'll get some wins, but the teams that have been building for a few seasons, those are the teams that are going to turn it on. A lot of teams in the East haven't because they've been falling apart. So, like, Charlotte's falling apart. Washington, Atlanta seems to be in flux all the time. No matter what kind of level of talent they have, they just seem to be in flux all the time. Miami seems to just think they still have LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. And, like, they refuse to kind of, like, get out of their own way and figure out a new way to be successful. Milwaukee, obviously, they, you know, maybe Giannis is leaving, maybe he's staying. So, like, there's a lot of flux. But when it comes down to it, when these guys got to get on the floor, teams like Detroit that really been, you know, building for a few years, yeah, I think they'll pan out. I think the Knicks will be fine. I believe they'll probably get an offensive-minded coach, maybe a backup point guard that can run a second unit. That way, you know, Jalen can get some rest. So I think they'll be fine. I believe Boston's still a 50-win team. I know they might make a couple of moves. I still think they're a 50-win team. Orlando has had a climb. They have the opportunity, but I don't know if Desmond Bane is the piece that moves them to top 3.
Well, see, this is my thought behind it. So you already have your setup, if you will. You know, Wagner and Bankero are your 1-2. You know, Desmond Bane and Jalen Suggs, I guess we can argue about who three and four are, but they're interchangeable in a certain way.
Who's but, your point guard?
You know, it would probably start out as Suggs unless you go out and get, like I said, a Tyus Jones or somebody.
That's
like
what I'm saying. So, like, that's you what know? I mean. Like, I think these teams, they make these trades, and the trades don't make their team. Like, it doesn't create, like, cohesion for the team.
Yeah, I think that. I think 15 that,
and 32 for the Celtics. What, they lose Porzingis? They lose Hauser?
Maybe Holiday?
Maybe Holiday, but I don't know if Holiday really has to go. Like, that deal can be restructured. Like, why would I want to go anywhere else?
Or even if, I think you're still building for when Tatum gets back. So, you know what I mean? You're getting younger and fresher for when he comes back. Because whenever Tatum comes back, Holiday is going to be 2 years older. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like a next year thing. But I think that with that, but I think that's where sometimes a lot of people get caught in the I forgot what that old saying is, but you get caught up in the weeds, if you will, because Desmond Bane isn't going to come there and be asked to put up 23 points a game or something like that. You know, it's more like get in where you fit in. So when you look at Memphis, the structure of Memphis, you had Ja and you had Triple J, but there were times where Desmond Bane was the number two. Orlando has a very defined 1-2. You know what I mean? So at worst or at best, you're asking him to be number three. So if Desmond Bane can get you 17, 18 points a game, that's luxury, especially when he's pulling the defense out here, which allows Bancaro and Wagner to get there. And that's kind of the problem right now, is that they were last in three-point percentage this season, 23rd in attempts, and you're bringing in a 41% career shooter along with Jalen Suggs, a 40% shooter coming back. You're going to move Jonathan Isaacs, I'm assuming, so you could get another cheap shooter for him. You know, somebody like a Corey Kispert from Washington, or, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. I haven't heard any rumors. But somebody like that, that your job is to be Kyle Korver over here. So you just shoot in the corner when I find
you. Is Luke Kennard still sitting on somebody's bench?
He's in Memphis. You know what I mean?
Get him up. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's somebody what I'm like saying. So I think that, obviously, a team, like you brought up Detroit, who I didn't bring up because I forgot about them. But Detroit is a perfect team to bring up in this scenario, because that's a team that has a leg up on Orlando, because they have this year of continuity to go forward with.
And know, like I said, they drafted their players, and a few of them have been through, I mean, some adversity early on in their career. So, like, that's the piece. Because we talk about, you know, OKC and their move. Well, that's because Oklahoma City used every aging superstar that they had. Granted, it was a few years back, but you still, like, they were like, you know, I think Paul George is probably like 27 or so when they made that trade. Because I believe he's 34 now, right? So we're in that range.
Yeah,
so he was in his late 20s. But he was like, you know what, let's go from 27 to 22 and then see how it works out in three or four years.
And if I'm Orlando, I probably try to move Wendell Carter too and try to find some form of an upgrade at the center position, at least from a consistency standpoint. Like, maybe I go draft Ryan Kalkbrenner out of Creighton. This ain't the draft preview show. We'll do that Tuesday, but I'm just saying, you know, Ryan Kalkbrenner out of Creighton, get that 7-1, 7-2 guy that can shut down the paint. You don't need them to score. Just be big in the paint, you know? And I think that going back to the finals for a mini second, I think that Miles Turner is going to decide what happens in the East next year to some degree as well, because he's a free agent. You know, Indiana's been trying to trade him just as long as Atlanta tried to trade John Collins. So yeah. I've heard Detroit.
I remember Buddy Hield, Miles Turner trade rumors from years ago.
The Lakers. Yeah. And, But Miles Turner has been linked to the Pistons, so that could be a thing. And if that happens, look out for Detroit.
What are you gonna do with Stu? You gonna run him at the same time?
Stu played a four.
You know what I'm saying? Stu think he boxing. He think he out there doing MMA matches.
You know what I'm saying? Well, obviously you're moving Durant in that scenario, so I would imagine that Durant ends up in Indiana with that, if that were to happen, sign and trade or something along those lines. But, you know, but I like the move for Orlando, because I think that, oh, that's a good one too, Mike. You know, that's a good one too, old boy from Stanford. That is a, that's a really good move. But I think Orlando is not a contender. I don't think they're going to be a contender. So even if they did finish top three or top four, I'm not saying that that means that I think they're a threat for the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I just think that when I look at Orlando, they took Cleveland to seven last season in the first round. You know, this
the same
season,
problem you talked about this season.
Yeah,
they didn't shoot the three well.
Right.
And they didn't adjust.
They still gave Boston a few good games. Like, Boston won that series in five, but Orlando was hanging around. And that's where somebody like a Desmond Bain can close those margins a little bit. Like, maybe you don't win. Obviously, you're not beating, you know, Boston at full strength, but maybe you get the six instead of five. You know, maybe you could contend with the Knicks, you know, until they get right or whatever the case may be. But I like the move. Now, on the other side of that, Mr. Logical, what does it mean for Memphis?
That means they're selling, they're rebuilding, and I think it's smart because they have the luxury of being – everyone talks about these small market teams. These small market teams have the luxury of rebuilding and selling hope to the fan base. Because I think the ticket prices are reasonable. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, hell, even Brooklyn, it's hard for you to just rebuild when you're in that kind of market because the expectation is because you're in that market, you should be attracting players. You should be attracting the best of the best because you're in proverbially what they deemed as the best markets. Salt Lake, Utah Jazz, they can rebuild. Phoenix had a nice little run. So now I think they're like small enough to be like, you know what? This is Phoenix. We're chilling out here. We can go ahead and move Booker and Durant, whatever we got to do. And I think Memphis is in that same position. New Orleans needs to kind of look at that and see like, hey, are we going anywhere with this squad? Can we make some move to get to where OKC is? Can we get a young star? You know, can we get a young star to build around that we are not paying first round or fourth, second, third overall pick money to? Because I think that's going to handcuff. I think that's handcuffing Memphis and New Orleans. But I think with Memphis is like, because they have Ja and because he signed, you know, number two overall deal pick, got the rookie extension. Now he's going to be up for a bigger extension. It's like, am I giving this guy $55 million
a year? Jackson is due a big extension too.
Am I giving these guys $55 million a year for us to go 37 and 45?
Well, that's the thing about it. If you go back and look at it though, like, you know, obviously, you know, so 2 years ago they were the two seed. They lost that series to the Lakers where we learned that Dylan Brooks likes to poke bears.
Yeah, you know, they didn't have any bigs. All their bigs were injured. Yeah.
Yeah, Ja got suspended. So last year was, you know, we don't even got to go there. And then this year, they actually started 34 and 15. So I don't know if they're going to go full rebuild versus a full retool, because now that they got those picks, you know, you could trade those picks and get something in to put around Ja, you know, because like when you look at, you know, you talked about Desmond Bain, right? Not a force multiplier per se. You know, like Kennard's still there. He's probably gone. You know, you got Jake LaRavia. You know, like these guys. You know, you drafted Jalen Wells last year.
Yeah, Zach Edey.
Yeah, Zach Edey, who's hurting his feet now. But watch out. He's hurting his feet now.
7'4" feet hurt.
Yeah, but you know, but I think with these picks, I think that gives them flexibility to where they don't have to rebuild per se. Like
can
when
you
I like
pay?
I think.
With, like, do you pay? Do you?
Well, I think
pay
you just make a decision. I think you
either one of these guys to avoid a rebuild.
I think you make a decision. I think you probably move Triple J. You keep Ja, and then you just build around that and see what you can do with it, at least for a year, and see how it plans out. And then next summer you go.
Has he formally requested a trade, or is that some of this, you know, social media?
No. So back around the All-Star game, there were reports that came out. That when the Luka thing happened, there were reports that came out, and I forgot who the reporter was, but he just basically said, keep an eye on Ja Morant. And then it just went from there. Like, people like just kind of ran with
who would make, if you're Memphis, who's calling you? Brooklyn?
Brooklyn is a good one just because of the money. I would imagine Sacramento, you know, because they lost both Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox. You still got Sabonis. They're probably going to move DeRozan. So maybe.
So you got LaVine and DeRozan there.
Yeah. So maybe.
You can't have all three.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's already talk that they're going to move DeRozan at the very least. Sabonis, I know, was doing the whole we'll see what the offseason looks like. Maybe Miami, because Miami never really wants to rebuild. You know, they just kind of play around, grab players, and say, let's do our best. They never just tear it down. So I can see Miami. I mean, they're in the Durant sweepstakes that we'll get to in a second. You know, so you got Miami, Sacramento, and I don't know if there's many more than that, because when you look at Ja Morant, you got to talk about availability. You know, like, is he going to play? Because remember, I gave that stat a couple of weeks ago.
If he just stopped and just shot the floater, just shoot the floater, you'll get your dunk. You're going to get your putback dunks. You're going to get your alley-oops. You're going to get your fast break dunks. If somebody's in the paint, just shoot the pull-up.
Yeah.
Don't try to dunk on this guy and fall on a hip, and now you're out 3 to 4 weeks. Like, just get the 2 points and go back on defense.
What about
everything doesn't have to be a highlight reel.
What about Toronto? You know, maybe you move RJ Barrett. You know, you got Ja with Brandon Ingram, Scottie Barnes. You know, you got the number 9.
Crazy-ass bus ride.
You know, you got Grady Dick. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, that could be interesting.
If you feel like, hey, they've been down a couple years, got to see some guys develop, say, hey, are these guys ready to take the next step? Do we add a? Because I
what if the Rockets don't end up with Durant?
You need a guy like Charles Barkley said. You need three type of guys on your team. You need a guy that can get his own bucket. You need a guy that can be a great on ball defender, and you need a crazy guy. Those three guys. So if I think every team to contend, short of Indiana this year, but you need a guy that can get you 26 to 29 points.
So let's just walk this out with me real quick. So let's say you're the Rockets, right? You strike out on Durant. Can I do something like a Jalen Green, Cam Whitmore, or Reed Shepard? Maybe another player, Jock Landale, maybe, for Ja Morant.
But you're moving Jalen Green.
Because Houston seems to be big game hunting, you know. So even if
you're moving Jalen Green and that,
I think you would have to. What are you doing with Fred? Fred, you let him walk.
What about the relationship between Dylan Brooks and Ja Morant? Was it soiled when he left Memphis?
That's a great question that we don't know the answer to. You know what I mean? But I think you at least make the call if you can't get Durant, even though I would argue that you don't even need Durant in the first place, but
I don't know why. I don't understand Houston's infatuation with Durant.
Well, I think
Phoenix didn't give away all their capital, I think they'd be better off trying to. If I was Phoenix, I would try to get some young talent from another team for Bradley Beal if I could. I don't know what I read today,
I don't know what market he has either, but Durant is down to the final three because he said he didn't want Minnesota. You know, he wants the Knicks, but the Knicks don't want him. So it looks like we're down to Miami, Houston, and San Antonio for Durant.
How many? What you getting? 2 more years out of Durant?
Maybe. Because you would have to, and this is the problem, right? Because the Suns don't really owe Kevin Durant anything. You know, like just to piss off Mike, you know, Phoenix could say you're going to Chicago. But the problem is that Durant's in the last year of his deal coming up, so he can pull that I'm not going to resign wherever, you know, unless you send me to one of these teams.
Well, I don't think the package you're going to get for Durant is going to be as extensive as what Memphis just got for Desmond Bane. I think it's a very, it's going to be maybe, like they're saying Jalen Green, for some reason, maybe I think Houston just wants to move him.
But the problem,
I don't know if he just doesn't fit what Ime wants to do. Or maybe he's just the most exciting piece, and he might be that next guy that's like up for the big money.
I'm gonna get to that. But the problem is that Durant's making 48 and a half. So, you know what I'm saying, you gotta match that. So you're gonna get something. But as far as Jalen Green goes,
yeah, I think you might get somebody like Malcolm Brogdon and a couple of guys that are making 26. Like, because like if you gotta match the money, like I said, we did a like a segment last year. I think I was having a conversation with someone at work as well. It's like, I think Malcolm Brogdon's making 26.
Something like that.
So yeah. you pair up a couple of guys and it's like, hey, Phoenix, this is what you're gonna get. You're not gonna get 4 and 5 draft picks.
Well, so the thing with Jalen Green, I think, is Jalen Green is a victim of our society that we live in now, the microwave society. You know, it didn't work out this year, so give up on him. That's the problem. I mean, don't forget, he was the number two pick in the draft, and the only person picked ahead of him was Cade Cunningham. You know, don't forget, he's got 40-point games. You know, don't forget that he's not even 25 yet. You know what I mean? But I think that these teams...
And yeah, that's why I don't understand him for Durant. Because it's like... He's 12 years younger than Durant.
Because people think that if you add Durant, it means that you can contend. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's the thing, Mike. Like, young dudes play like shit all the time. You know what I'm saying? You don't trade every young dude that plays like shit. You know what I mean? Because, like, if we're looking at it on a realistic level, right? Like, just on a realistic level. You know, you look at somebody like, say...
I talked about it for like head to cut 12, but we talked about this before when they signed Fred. It was like, you can't be young and old at the same time. Like, I'm old. I can't be in a club like it's 2002 no more. Like, I can go to the bar, I can hang out, but I'm out. Houston was trying to do both. And it was like, when they signed Dylan Brooks and Fred, I was like, your team is already young. You could I think they could have ran with the squad they had. Maybe you could have made a move for Durant then, like 2 years ago. But when they signed Fred, I was like, why you signed Dylan Brooks and Fred? It's like, you could teach these other young boys how to play defense.
And that's the problem, right? Because if you get Kevin Durant, let's just say he ends up in Houston, Kevin Durant. You know, now you just took the ball out of Amen Thompson's hands, you know, who's developing and turning into a great player. You know, you just mortgaged everything for the hopes of winning a championship in 1 year, because Kevin Durant's going to be 38. So I don't know how long that's going to last. This ain't LeBron, who can bully, you know, at one point could bully his way into the paint and still, you know, has the frame or whatever to play down low if he wanted to. This is a jump shooter that we're talking about with old ass injured legs. So like, even if you get
and he hasn't played 65 games in the last 6 years either.
Yeah, even if you get the very, very best of what Kevin Durant could still be, I still don't know how far that takes you right now. You know what I mean? In the West. You know what I mean? Maybe
unless you're putting him on a Tim Duncan Popovich kind of plan where it's 18 to 26 minutes and he just puts up as many shots as he can.
That's why I say to Houston, if you're going to make a trade, stop fucking around and go get Giannis.
I mean, if we look at the money, Jalen Green is going to get $33 million next year. That's when his extension kicks in. So he's getting 33, 36, and 36 between 2025, 26, and 2027, 28. So he's getting... That's about 100.
But that's the problem. Real quick.
That's 100 million right there.
Hold on, real quick. That's the problem, because Houston hasn't made Tari Eason or Jabari Smith available in the talks. The Suns don't want Jalen Green, you know, because they have concerns about Jalen Green next to Devin Booker. What does that look like? So, So that's where we're kind of at right now.
If you can move Bradley Beal, it's perfectly. It's nothing wrong with having a guy that's super athletic that gets to the rim with size, and a guy that's a crafty veteran that can get his pull-up jump shot.
But like, it goes back to the same thing you asked me earlier when I was talking about Desmond Bane and Jalen Suggs. Who's the point guard?
That's the problem they got to address. I don't know what point guard you're going to trade for.
I don't know if they're bringing Tyus Jones back. You know what I mean? So that's where everything gets a little convoluted for Phoenix, to where somebody's going to put them over the barrel and they ain't going to get shit for KD because they have no leverage, because, like I said, he's already nailed it down to three teams. I think he wants to go to San Antonio. That's what I think.
Hold on. I'm going to read something to you real quick. Phoenix, $214 million is what they were paying this year. $218 next year. Boston's at $227, so that's pretty high. But this year, Phoenix was paying $214 to their lineup. Ooh. And that includes, so next year, Durant's getting $54
That might be a good one, Mike. That might be a good one. He's not.
Brad Beal is
fast. I like that. CP3 to Orlando. I like that. You know, he doesn't have to play fast. They don't play fast. You know, like that could be a good fit. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want him, but that could be a good fit.
$160 million between Brad Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker.
Yep.
That Phoenix is paying. And they want a trade, and someone's going to pick up this $54 million?
Because they think that it means a championship. So like, if you're – okay, so look, let me do it like this. If you're San Antonio
– all right, I'm looking at it. San Antonio has $145 million on the books for 25-26 as of right now.
If you're San Antonio, you know, obviously you're not giving up Wemby. I wouldn't give up Castle for Durant, but I could give up Vassell, Harrison Barnes, and one other, you know, and still feel all right to where.
In the NBA, the money has to match, right?
Right.
All right, so.
I think Vassell is making the most right now.
You got De'Aaron Fox. He's going to get $37
million. I don't think you're trading him.
You're not trading him. Devin Cap Vassell, $27 million. Keldon Johnson, 17. Harrison Barnes, 19. Stephon Castle, 9. So you got to go Vassell, Vassell, and Barnes. That's 40.
Yeah, Vassell and Barnes.
46 million. And you got throwing a couple picks, probably.
Throwing like two picks, maybe. And so from that standpoint, maybe I can
Phoenix take that deal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can live with that if I'm Phoenix.
If you're Phoenix?
Right? Yeah, I can live with that. You know what I mean? Because Vassell has 22-point-a-game potential, you know, even though he shoots way too much for my liking. Harrison Barnes gives you a veteran presence, you know. So I can live with that. And you get picks that you don't have, you know, because you gave all your picks away. So if I'm Houston, I see no reason to bring in Kevin Durant. I see no reason to bring in Kevin Durant. You know, run it back. You know, if I'm Miami, I see no reason to bring in Kevin Durant because, you know, you just got Khalil Ware. You just got, you know, you still got Bam. You know, like if you're Miami, you probably need guards. You don't need Kevin Durant. You need guards. You know, somebody other than Tyler Hero.
You need guards that weigh at least 200 pounds.
Yeah. And you know, because so if you.
Duncan Robinson is Miami, and Tyler Hero.
Right, so what is Miami giving up to get Durant? They ain't giving up. Okay, so Andrew Wiggins.
Look at the money.
So they're probably going to give up Andrew Wiggins.
So if we look at the 25, 26, Wiggins getting 28, Rozier's getting 26.
So and maybe 44. Hawkins. Maybe if I'm Phoenix, I ask for Hawkins because he's still on the rookie scale.
And that's $3 million. So that's 44. That's $47 million and a pick.
There you go. They'll say, but I don't see why you do it.
But if you're Terry Rozier is probably like one of the worst basketball players.
He's about to go to jail, ain't he?
I think he was. They said he was point shaving or something. Yeah, I'm like, why are you doing that when you're making $26 million and Florida, no state tax?
But you know, so that's why I don't see why Miami would do it. Like, maybe you could convince yourself, because the narrative around the league is going to be, ooh, the East is going to be terrible next year, or like the East is, you know, under construction right now. So I'm sure, hey, we got what people consider to be a top two or three coach in the league. So maybe we can make a run. But I just don't see it worth it, because you're only going to get a year or two out of Durant anyway. That, you know, by then, Bam's going to want out when it doesn't work.
Could Toronto do it?
They just signed B.I., so I don't know if they want to just turn around and he has
to have two versions.
Unless you're giving up Scotty Barnes, maybe Emmanuel Quickly or R.J. Barrett. But I don't think you want Booker and Barrett together.
All right, got it. Jimmy Butler for Kevin Durant, straight up.
No, the Warriors ain't giving up Jimmy Butler. And Durant turned them down. Remember, that was the whole reason he's not in Golden State right now, is because he didn't want to go there.
It's $54 million due to Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's getting $110 million over the next two seasons.
I think Minnesota would have been the move. You know what I mean? Because you could have got a signing trade for Julius Randle or Naz Reid. You know, you could probably get one of Dillingham or Terrence Shannon. You know, you could get some picks. Maybe you even get Gobert. I don't know.
You got Gobert at 35, Edwards at 45, Julius Randle at 30, Jaden McDaniels at 24, Naz Reid at 15. That's a lot of money. I didn't realize Jaden McDaniels was getting that kind of money.
Yeah, that's why they can't. That's why they're going to lose Nikhil Alexander Walker, because they can't 50, afford him because he's due.
He's getting $118 million over years. Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, McDaniels. Yeah.
24, 26. Yeah, McDaniels.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So they're going to lose Nikhil Walker Alexander already. You know, he's going to walk, you know. And then you got to make a decision on Gobert, I guess, you know, unless you're still in that window. He's cheap, at least. Well, or are you in that window of, we gave up so much to get him that we can't trade him?
But he's cheap. He's only $35 million. I know I'm saying only, like, it's not my
right,
money.
Right, but
it's
right, like, right. But that's what I'm saying. But if
35, Phoenix, Julius Randle, one more year for 30.
But if you're Phoenix, does that tempt you? Like, oh, he's only $35 million. We get a shot blocker. I don't know.
But if you're Minnesota, you can't give up Gobert for Durant. You have no size after that.
I mean, there's still free agency. Like, free agency hasn't happened yet. Well, you know, we still got the NBA draft. Like, I don't know. Do you get Durant and try to get Miles Turner?
Oh no! All I know is the Lakers have been trying to get a quality big for like the last two or three off seasons. They don't seem to be available to the level of Minnesota. Minnesota's achieved 2 years in a row Western Conference Finals. Giving up Gobert for KD and then going out and searching maybe Isaac Lee's Orlando or Miles Turner. Like, it just, I just feel like you're putting yourself behind the eight ball with no real guarantee. A lot like how you feel about the Knicks where they fired their coach. Like, yeah, you want to make improvements and you want to get new personnel in.
The only big that jumps out to me is Nick Claxton. You know, he's the only big that.
And he's really, tall. He's not a big. He's just a tall.
And I don't think Brook Lopez is going to be back in Milwaukee, but he's 36 or 37. Bobby Portis is a free agent. So,
a big.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I don't know.
He's not a big. He's
Luca Garza, huh?
I mean,
you know, shout out to the Hawkeyes.
You're going to have to do something. Like, I mean, you can't just have. Let me check his. 6'10", 235, just sitting on the bench. Like, if you're going to move Gobert, like, put him in there. But
right. You know. And then you got the Knickerbockers. You know, I said Nick Kerr, you know, still looking for a head coach. They got turned down by five different teams looking for permission to talk to their coaches. Are you familiar with the five teams?
Was it the Bulls?
The Bulls.
It wasn't Denver.
Wasn't Denver.
Billy Donovan, where is he at?
Yeah, that's the Bulls.
That's the Bulls coach, okay. They're probably waiting to talk to Rick Carlisle, knowing them. trying to think, who else was it? Sacramento's coach? No.
No, it was the Bulls. They reached out to Jason Kidd, or to Dallas, I should say. You know, they reached out to Atlanta for Quinn Snyder, which was like, that was the one that threw me for the loop. Like, I like Quinn Snyder as a coach, but still, they reached out for Ime.
And they had the opportunity to sign Ime before.
And then they reached out, with Chris Finch of Minnesota. You know, so those are the five that have officially turned down the Knicks.
The assistant that was running the bench last year when Finch got injured in Minnesota, that's probably a good call to make.
I still like Johnny Bryant, but I think that he's probably not being looked at because he was under Tibbs, you know, like for a couple of years. So that's probably not an option there. But Monica McNutt, via the Bomani Jones, you know, the right time with Bomani Jones, she thinks that Jason Kidd is still in play and that he will end up as the Knicks coach.
You give up coaching Cooper Flagg to go to New York?
No.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they didn't get the number one pick.
Unless you want New York. Like, that's the only reason. Like, why would Ime leave Houston?
I don't know. I know the owner doesn't have like great history with people. I know there's a lot of beef there with the owner of Houston, and like I think even the community. Like I think people just don't really rock with him. I can see the Luka trade if the reports that we were hearing were true of X amount of people who we deemed should have known about the trade didn't know, and if Jason Kidd was one of those people in that we felt should know, who really didn't know. Without Dallas having the number one pick, I could see him entertaining the New York. Because, like, if, say, hypothetically, because they would have had a 2% chance to get the number one pick.
Right.
Say they would have got 9. And it's like, okay, who am I getting at 9? Kyrie's rehabbing. AD is, you know, constantly, like, just, you know, recovering from injuries. Klay Thompson had a couple of lower leg injuries. You know, he's not the same, but he's still, you know, coming back. And then I don't really have any other dynamic players outside of those three guys. Yeah, I think he entertained New York. But the idea of being able to get the number one overall pick and then pairing them with these guys when they're healthy, I think that keeps him in Dallas. But maybe still looking like, all right, Kyrie's coming back in January. Best case scenario, 100% by next March.
If I'm Jason Kidd and I leave for the Knicks, the sole reason is
I want to coach
y'all ain't fire Nico after that bullshit, so I'm the scapegoat when things don't work.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like some relationship fabric had to be torn when Luka got traded. Because I saw a picture of Luka the other day, and he looks about 6'8", 228. He looks like he's gonna come back, and
But is he gonna play defense though?
I mean, if he has 25 or 30 less pounds, just at 6'8", it should make him a half step quicker. That way, at least, even if he's not a great defender, at least you're there. At least you know, because it looks like guys were just blowing by him because he just looked big,
right?
You know. But if he does slim down, I don't know, like I said, what his offseason regimen is supposed to be. But if I'm Jason Kidd, you felt blindsided by it because he will be the scapegoat, especially like maybe even now when you get Cooper Flagg and it doesn't look like, you know, those USA basketball highlights that everybody was seeing of Cooper Flagg going against all the NBA, the Olympic team. He could be a scapegoat. Yeah. But yeah, the Knicks definitely, they need to get a coach that can install an offense, and they need to get some
people you heard the,
in place that can just – you just need a second unit. You need four guys that can come off the bench, one of them being a point guard. You need 9 guys in the NBA. 10 is probably great. 11 is probably like – I don't know why more teams aren't trying to play 11 guys. We got 82 games. If we had a couple of games like hypothetically, like Jason Tatum said this and kind of bit him in the ass. Like if we're playing, you know, Washington on the back to back. I think Jaylen Brown said it, you know, I might get arrested or something like that. I understand that.
Hey, we appreciate you, but no, thank you. Michael Jordan hasn't touched a basketball in like 22 years. We don't need to do that.
So appreciate the input though. But yeah, that's, you know.
So like for me, did you hear the two candidates that people are saying are the leaders right now
for the Knicks?
Yeah.
I heard it better not be Jay Wright. I heard that name tossed around a lot.
No, Mike Brown and Taylor Jenkins.
It's not bad. Those are
I don't good mind coaches. The Taylor Jenkins. I don't know how I feel about the
I Mike think Brown. Mike Brown just got moved. He you know he's coached a lot, but he definitely Mike is wilding. He definitely had a bad run and like getting fired on your way to work. You know, when you're on the way to catch the team playing after the press conference, it's like it's pretty low blow. But like I said, he's a good coach. I think Taylor Jenkins got a raw deal as well. So Taylor Jenkins got a raw deal. So I think either one of those work. The problem is it's New York, and I don't know if we don't know who's calling the shots. We don't know if it's a GM and some analytics guys thinking like, hey, this is the personnel we have. This is the money we have. These are the people we think would be available. We think this kind of coach would fit. If it's like, I'm not a big analytics guy, but if it's like a cohesive group of people saying, okay, what do we have? You know, like a real think tank kind of a situation. All right, that'll work. But if it's simply just the owner saying, I want to get this guy in here and this guy make it work, then I think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. For sure. So speaking of problems, I saw the Orlando Magic come out with their ugly ass logo, their ugly ass new uniforms that tried to tap into the past of the great uniforms, but it failed. So I started sitting around. I started thinking, what teams could use a rebrand? You know, like whether that's uniforms, whether that's moving to another city, whether that's a logo, whether it's a mascot, you know, just anything that, you know, would help improve some team's fortune. So I'll let you kick us off. You got anything that comes to mind?
I think the New Orleans Pelicans is run its course. They need to go to Vegas and be the Las Vegas Vipers. I don't know, something else.
You know what I like? I like the Las Vegas Blackjacks.
Oh, I was thinking you're going to say that. I was literally going to say Blackjacks.
Yeah.
I think it sounds goofy right now with us saying it, but I think if after it gets to Vegas
What would be fire is if we could get the Las Vegas Kings, but you know what I mean? That's already – the Kings are already a thing.
Yeah.
And the Aces are already the WNBA team.
Yeah. So, I think it's time for them to probably move. Louisiana's a football state. I mean, from high school football to college football to where they love their Saints. I know a few Saints fans. None of them mentioned the Pelicans to me ever in conversation. It's just like when you I know a lot of Giants fans, you know, in this area. I know a lot of Eagles fans, but they also they dabble in the Flyers. They dabble in the Phillies, and they dabble in the 76ers. Some people are diehard Philly tuxedo all the way with the Philadelphia Flyers hat, the Eagles jersey, the 76ers hoodie, like that we call the Philly tuxedo when you wear all the teams at once. So some of these people out here in Philly are diehard. The people I know from space seems a little racist. But so if you think about New Orleans, like the Saints fans that I know and like the people who get at me in these different sports, they don't bring up the Pelicans. So I figured you move them. It's still West. They could just move them from New Orleans to Vegas, get them to rebrand, give them probably throw them the same colors as the WNBA team, the Aces. There's plenty of places for them to play. They can play at T-Mobile Arena. I think there's another arena there that built up, but like the T-Mobile Arena is right downtown. So you have the hockey team, you have the football team, WNBA team. Might as well get the New Orleans Pelicans, get them out of New Orleans. Because like I said, I don't think people in New Orleans are going to miss them. The Saints people own both teams, so like the money's still there. Like it just move that team out of there and, you know, get a little excitement. Because everyone keeps talking this Seattle thing, and it's like, Seattle.
Don't you start.
And I'll hop on this. I'll die on this hill. Seattle, Portland, Sacramento are all somewhat benefiting from Golden State still being like popular and relevant. But as soon as Steph leaves and LeBron inevitably retires, you got the Lakers and the Clippers out west, and that's all people are going to talk about because that's the only city people would want to travel to. Like if you gave someone $5,000, say, hey, you can travel from the East Coast to the West Coast, pick any one of the major cities. No one's picking anyone's. 1 out of 10 people picking the Northwest. Everybody else is like, yeah, I'm going to LA. You give me 5 G's, I'm going to LA. Or I'm going to Vegas. So if you put the Pelicans in Vegas, it's Vegas. So like that just sells itself.
So I'm just going to take it from the top. You know, speaking of Vegas, you know, obviously the Oakland A's, Sacramento A's, whoever A's need to switch up all that shit when they get to Vegas. But that goes without saying, so let's not go there. Let's go with a global iconic city. You know, you think about the world and what makes the world works. This, you know, the city that everybody wants to get to. So with that being said, I shouldn't even have to say the name of the city that I'm talking about, but just for reference, why the fuck would somebody in China care about somebody called Brooklyn? So that's no disrespect to Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, Brooklyn is a great borough in this country. Yeah, you know what I mean? If Brooklyn was its own city, it would be bigger than Chicago. So no disrespect intended to Brooklyn. But when you're talking about branding and imaging and just having something that pops when you see it or when you hear it, it's got to be the New York Nets, you know, because I don't know what Brooklyn does for you. And also, as an aside, you got to do something about those black and white uniforms.
They are kind of like, boring.
Yeah, because like with the Yankees, right, they got the boring colors too, but the blue and white. But the Yankees at least have the pinstripes, you know, that are iconic and traditional. And when you think pinstripes, you think Yankees. You know, so the only thing I think about when I think about the Brooklyn Nets is the dumbass crowd saying, Brooklyn. So y'all even need a better chant. Like just rip everything.
The
down.
Song is dope.
No, I know the song is dope, but
yeah, you gotta play the song. Yeah, you gotta play the song in the arena. I just feel like Brooklyn definitely needs it because they've gone through multiple owners. Remember, they initially had Jay-Z in the ownership group, and that was a big driving point. But then, you know, however the money changed hands, that was no longer part of the process, and then they were sold to that Russian oligarch. He had the team for a little bit, made the Kevin Garnett, Darren Williams, Paul Pierce move, which ended up, I think, landing Boston. I think Boston ended up getting Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum out of those moves. And then now they're sold to another guy, tech guy, Joe Tsai or something like that. So, yeah, the rebrand, like I said, we were talking about it before. I think the hat would look dope because it would say NYN. So, you know, that's always a good selling point. And the Nets, you can leave the name so people still say the Nets. Because when you said this to me, I was thinking about the Los Angeles Anaheim. Yeah, so they changed theirs, but they just have to win more games. They have Mike Trout in there in LA, but I remember they changed that, and I'm like, okay, I get it, because Anaheim.
Hey, and nobody cared about him.
Yeah, because it's crazy. I forgot that he was on that team, and now he's on the Dodgers. I literally just remember, like, oh, he was on that team first, and they couldn't keep him. But yeah, so Anaheim Angels changed the name to Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So it was like the Angels of the Angels, because you know Spanish Los Angeles is the Angels. So yeah, they needed a rebrand. But yeah, I think New York Nets works. You can keep the color. But you just, the font,
you might something just need to add something to it.
The font, maybe. Like
maybe you could add some kind of some blue silver. To it. Maybe you could add some kind of blue to it to represent like the rivers or the.
Or gray or something. But I think the font on the jerseys would probably need to be upgraded.
Yeah, it looks like when you created a uniform, you know, before we got all the technology now that we have on NBA 2K.
Yeah. It just has a very bland, but I think, like you said, it was because it's New York. You think it just sells, but you might need to fully invest and go like, all right, we can go full on into this right. Understanding that we are New York basketball
team. And then the second and third things that came to mind was both of our teams, you know, because you got the Atlanta Falcons. Basically out looking out like a bootleg Texas Tech, you know, when back in the day, one of the things that attracted me to the Falcons, you know, was of course Deion Sanders, but it was that red uniform, you know, that looked like the Georgia Bulldogs almost. It was kind of, and even the Michael Vick joints, like the solid black, like those were fire. You know,
then they switched it up when Vic's popularity rose. That's when they changed the jerseys up because it was like the team that went to the Super Bowl, that was that jersey. And then they switched to this. The current FUBU jersey situation that we've had recently is bad because it looked deliberate. Like soon as I saw it, I was like, this looks like a FUBU jersey. For us, by us, I get it, but I'm like, the NFL team doesn't need one, and they did like some polling, and Atlanta's the red, black, and white is like the most popular colorway, or like any colorway would like the black, but definitely that red, black, white, that colorway is one of the most popular across all sports. And then you have the Raiders, and I think that's kind of what Brooklyn was going for with like the simple, you know, black and white. It might be time to switch it up, but you need a little team success to switch it up, because if you switch it up while you're a successful team and you're hot, then those jerseys sell. Mm-hmm. But if you switch it up, like the old Brooklyn jerseys aren't going to like fly off the shelves when they get the new brand. That's what I'm saying. So it's like, that's also part of it. This, when you have a legacy like Boston, they don't need to change it. It's just Boston. It's simple, but they have a legacy of winning. Even the Lakers, to some degree, like that color. Not a lot of people really look good in that jersey playing, if you think about it. Like, if you just look at the jersey, like, it's an odd color. But the rebrand, I think, will really help the Nets.
And then of course, you know, I said our teams. So your team looks like Texas Tech. When my team wears their black uniforms, they look like Arizona State. So it just looked like a bunch of Big 12 running around the NFL. So the Washington Commanders, besides the fact that they need to change the name too, you know, those uniforms are just so blah for such a team that has a tradition, like you mentioned earlier. And then, of course, their regular uniforms, their maroon and, or I'm sorry, burgundy and gold, looks like the Minnesota Golden Gophers. It looks like the M is just upside down and you made a W out of it. So a team like Washington that has the history that they have needs a unique representation. But the problem is that applies to the Bullets/Wizards too. And it might be time to bring back the Bullets. You know, so each team, you have a city like Washington that's all about legislation and the White House and all these things. You got ready-made names already for you. Like, if you don't want to go with another Native American, like, you could use a Native American tribe for the Commanders if you wanted to, if you could work that out. But, you know, you got names out there like the Senators, the Admirals, the Diplomats. You could run with a whole lot of different things. You know what I mean? And the Wizards are even worse because you got ugly uniforms on top of an ugly name.
Why are they called Wizards? I know I lived in like that Northern Virginia area growing up.
That's what people voted for.
they got rid of Bullets because of the violence in DC. So they were like, we want to get rid of the name Bullets because we want to, you know, perpetuate in the cycle.
But it's stupid Wizards, because you're shooting a basketball, so Bullet makes sense anyway.
Yeah, but the Wizards don't make sense because it's not a lot of wizardry going on in Washington. So no Harry Potter action.
All right, what else you got?
Who else needs a rebrand? I'm trying to think.
I have one that doesn't make
Jacksonville sense. Jaguars might need to move. I think it's too many teams in Florida. Because they're
them to London, ain't you?
Well, it's almost like playing in Seattle if you're on the East Coast. But problem is it's like playing in Seattle for everybody. Like everyone's going that far. So I don't really like that. And football is an American sport. I would say maybe they're Jacksonville. I mean, South Carolina?
San Antonio?
Yeah, Jerry Jones would never allow it, but
that's too many. Hey, yeah, you already got enough.
But hey, no, let me walk this out though.
South Carolina.
Let me walk this out. Okay, Charleston, but let's walk this out though. Like, we just passed Philadelphia to become the sixth biggest city in the United States. So, in turn, biggest city in the country without an NFL team. You know, you got Austin right up the road that's got another 989,000 people. You got New Braunfels and San Marcos growing. So, you got about 3 million untapped fans here. Now granted, they're probably all Cowboy fans, or
that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, the problem, like that fan, like you probably have a substantial number of Jacksonville fans in that region.
Uh-huh.
You know, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina. You probably have enough fans there. It's definitely not as many in Jacksonville as the NFL would want because they're always threatening
the biggest city in the country and growing.
Well, maybe they need to lower their ticket prices or upgrade their field or do something, move it somewhere. Well,
I know they're working on a new stadium because remember, that's why Florida and Georgia, I don't know if it's a new stadium or if they're upgrading, but Florida and Georgia, the cocktail party was talking about moving games on campus. And remember, Kirby Smart was upset about that. So we'll see. I was also thinking, you know, to get a little controversial here. And like I said, this one doesn't make sense. But we got a podcast, and you know what I'm saying? I got things to say. Let's hear it. Los Angeles Clippers. Going back to Mr. Logical's point about LA. Okay, I got it. You ain't leaving LA, but you should. If your goal, obviously, is to make money, you stay in LA. You know what I mean? Correct. If you want to make your brand and have your own individualism and somewhere that accepts you, I might holler at them tech boys. You know what I'm saying? Because Ballmer's already a Microsoft dude. I might holler at San Jose. You know, and try to move and build an identity in the 13th biggest city in the country with less lost in San Francisco year to year.
Which you're right in the same block with the Warriors.
But it goes back to what you said, though. When Steph retires, you know, the Warriors.
Yeah, that whole region's dead, though. That's what I'm saying. When Steph is gone, that whole region blacks out. The only light is going to be Los Angeles.
Or could you go to San Diego, where you started?
Successful.
You know, saying, no, but there's no football team there now. So, you know, so you're the show in town now. Like, nobody cares about the Padres for real.
Yeah, but maybe people don't come to that town because it's not enough.
Maybe. Or to your earlier point, this was my last one. So to your earlier point, right? New Orleans, goes to Vegas. Clippers go to Seattle.
The Clippers would have to get Cooper Flagg and win a chip in order to get people to follow them to Seattle. it's just a strange dynamic of, them being little brother. They've even kind of operated through that lens by deliberately trying to outdo, you know, like their new arena and all the tech that he put into that. Right. I think it's a wise move because, like I said, when Steph is gone, the shadow, because we can see right now, the NBA Finals, it's probably some of the best basketball we've seen in NBA Finals in some years.
Long time.
Like, as far as, like, the competitiveness of the game.
I've been on record. I think it's the best series since the 3-1.
Yeah. So that's, call it, 9 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that was 9 years ago. Jesus Christ, I'm old. So they're having trouble keeping probably the people who are covering it. And I get Stephen A. Smith was probably playing solitaire, passing time. But even if he just was like a timeout and he just was doing it, the fact that the people who are covering the sport aren't doing a good job of highlighting your NBA finals, it's going to be very tough to keep.
Yeah, you should be taking notes or focused. Something instead of playing solitaire, yeah. Typing your phone.
It's going to be tough to keep people focused. Because like Portland, ever since Dame left a couple of years ago, he had the eye of the league there because Dame just was, he played so hard. Sacramento had a nice little run, and they seemed for some reason just to break that up almost immediately. Golden State's kept their, you know, their pieces together. I mean, they won championships in 2015, 17, 18, and 2022. It was like with, you know, essentially the same core guys. But for the most part, teams, they make the bad move. They sign the free agent to too much money. They hire a coach. They fire him too early. They hire the GM. They fire him. And it's like they're in this death spiral. And it's like the only thing keeping people's attention, basketball on the West Coast, Steph Curry, and then the guys who play in L.A., whether it's Luka, LeBron, even the Clippers, but it's because they play in L.A.
And I don't want to stay around Texas, but so outside of the Wizards, because the Wizards is the stupidest name in sports.
Correct.
The Texans got to be second, right?
No, I don't mind it.
I don't like it. Like
I don't mind it.
So what I like about certain cities like Pittsburgh, right? You know, the Pirates look like the Steelers. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like your teams in a lot of places, there's themes where these are the city colors or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So when you go to Pittsburgh, everything's painted black and yellow.
Yeah.
The bridge, the buildings, the people, like it's everywhere. It's a dope look. When you come to, like I driving through the tunnel, when it opens up, it's great. The seats are all yellow. Like it's a perfect city for that. They have a cohesive look to their teams.
So when I think about the Texans, I think let's keep this NASA thing going. You know, got the Rockets, you know, you got the Astros, you know, you got
the boosters.
You had the what? You had the Comets.
Boosters, like the Rockets or the boosters.
You had the Comet. No, I can't think of a really good name. So I was playing around. I was like the Arrows, but that's too close to Astro. Then you got the Galaxy, but that sounds too World League-ish, you know. Yeah.
And I think the L.A. team's called the Galaxy, the soccer team.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know where to go with that. But I just feel like it should be more themed to the city. Like, I think that's a unique enough branding where it just represents Houston. Just like the Titans, right? The Titans should just go to the Oilers' colors. You know, forget whatever that other shit is they trying to do. It ain't working. You know what I'm saying? The Cleveland Guardians, we got to do something about that too.
Well, they had a pretty good name before, and then, you know, people got offended just out of nowhere. There's some great movies too.
Well, I was thinking, like, with Cleveland, you could do something with the Cleveland Guardians, if you will. You could do something related to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or being on the Great Lakes, something along those lines.
There's a lot of lakes up there, but the Lakers took that.
But when I look at it, it's just one of those things that, like, the only thing I care about from Cleveland is Bone Thugs and Harmony, you know what I'm saying? Besides, you know, my boy Marvin Murphy, happy birthday, bro. You know what I'm saying? But that's all I care about in Cleveland. I don't care about nothing else about that city. I don't care about the Browns, you know, outside of the fact that they just shouldn't even exist. Like the Browns are the Clippers pre-Kawhi.
I mean, they've gotten better.
You know what I mean? But who else you got? What else stands out to you?
I'm trying to think. I think the NFL, like the Colts, like Brock. Honestly, I think most teams are pretty solid. Like I said, the Wizards, like you mentioned, it's not a good look. Everyone's talking about the Utah Jazz, but it's because they moved from New Orleans.
I had them written down. But I don't want them to change the brand.
It's such a staple. Like, they've had success. Right. If they were never successful, if they had, like, 30 years of just, you know, mediocrity, then it's time for a rebrand. But I think they've had legends there. They got the statues, you know, Malone, Stockton. They have the great jerseys that say Jazz. So they have an iconic basketball photo associated with their current brand. Some of these other teams, like New Orleans Pelicans, have there's nothing iconic about. Like, if you took all the New Orleans Pelicans stuff down and moved them to Vegas and called them the Vegas Spades, no one's going to be like, man, I really remember that Zion dunk that he had wearing the Pelican. Like, it just doesn't exist. Nah,
I think I don't want the Jazz to change their name. I would like them to bring back old uniforms. You know, whether, like, I don't necessarily.
They do it occasionally, but it just, they're on NBA TV on, like, a Wednesday night at 10:30.
I don't necessarily want the Stockton and Malones back just because.
They got to get rid of the city. Every team has to get rid of that city edition, whatever that is.
The Stockton and Malones are too, color-wise, they're still too New Orleans-like. You know what I mean? So the ones that they wore after that, you know, the AK-47s. You know,
oh, you like those? With the mountains. I like the purple ones with the mountains. The purple ones with the mountains. I like those.
Yeah, I like that.
Baby blue ones. Those are the ones. I was stationed out there. I like those.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's something unique that shows Utah. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, because I think that the Stockton and Malones are just too, it still looks like the New Orleans Jazz.
Yeah. But you the ones I mean? That they were wearing when they played in the NBA finals, those ones, the white with the purple mountains. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I want for the Jazz. The other team that I thought about, two more real quick. The Arizona Cardinals. Like, I think it's time to give up on the Cardinal thing.
The cult. They just need to rebrand the car. I believe they recently did it. The jersey is just, that burgundy is kind of blah. Like, they gotta get some other color in there to kind of
make it. Their all blacks look good. You know, when they wear the all black, that looks pretty good. But, yeah. And then the other team I thought about, and this is where, you know, all those people out there are going to accuse me of being woke. But it might be time for UNLV to retire the Running Rebels. Like, maybe that time has passed. Like, I don't know. Like, it kind of makes sense because it's Las Vegas, and when I just think of the word rebel, like, Vegas is Sin City and all that. But when I think of the caricature, if you will, you know, it's kind of,
and then, like, it's like Yosemite Sam kind of looking, right?
Yeah, like a little with looking, like,
the guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Nah, I don't
I think it. I always thought the name Running Rebels was just too long anyway, but it's just like, it's just there. So, like, changing is weird. Like, when they changed it from Redskins to the Washington Football Team, I was like, that's just strange. And then Commanders, like, it just,
right,
it didn't really fit. I get it, it had like a military theme and the Pentagon and DC being like the, you know,
they would have been better off being the Washington Pentagons for all I care.
Yeah.
Actually, I did have one more team. I did have one more team that I forgot about. The Detroit Pistons. You know, going back to the teal, you know, the Grant Hill joints with the horse in the middle. Because as it is, their logo is just that red, white, and blue basketball that says Pistons. And it looks like something that we would have made up on, like, what's that game? Damn, I had it in my head, the old Nintendo, Arch Rivals. It looked like something off of Arch Rivals or something. You know what I mean? So coming into the new century.
Something representing horsepower would be a little bit better.
Yeah.
But they probably did some research. They're like, hey, it's probably hard to sell that. But like, if you think, look back on it now, when you see pictures of Grant Hill dribbling the ball, it's like that jersey out, you know, it was pretty cool.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing is that when you're in these little markets like that, because I mean, obviously we think of Detroit as a big city, but you know what I mean? But market wise, not so much. So you know, like when I think about that, like these small markets, you got to find ways to stand out and attract different people because,
like,
you
the Denver Nuggets jersey over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Iconic. Like that. Iconic. Yeah. Alex English. You don't even have to know much about basketball. You know that jersey.
Yeah, it's just unique. You know what I mean? Like, I would probably like to see OKC do something a little more modern with their uniforms, but it's fine for now. They're still young, you know what I mean, if you will. But the last thing I wanted to ask you, so this is not about this anymore. This is just a random question. I saw a clip of Stephen A. today talking about how players like Jimmy Butler don't want to play in Memphis, you know, because of how dangerous it is and, you know, all that. So I just wanted your thoughts on that to wrap it up.
A lot of NBA cities, a lot of college towns are kind of plopped down in the middle of, you know, low income neighborhoods that have, you know, a high crime rate. Even if Salt Lake City, granted, that's probably like the only city where it isn't like that. But if you look around Philly, well, the whole area is like the police are there and they have it all, you know, and then you get out of Dodge.
Chicago,
you know, it's like so many cities are just, that goes to like a political realm where people have to kind of understand their responsibility there. But I think any city you go to, especially when they play in the NBA and it's a lot of congregation of people, Someone's gonna try it. Like, someone's gonna try to follow NBA player when they leave in whatever car, G-Wagon, Bentley, Rolls Royce, you know, Lambo. If you show up, you know, like, someone is always gonna be out here trying to do nefarious stuff. I'm not sure if players don't want to play in Memphis because of the violence. Because there's, you know where the hood is. Like, everybody know, like Chris Rock said, liquor store, gun store, gun store, we in the hood. Let's get out of here. Like, it sounds very, like, dismissive, but you know what it looks like. You know the type. You know what the environment looks like. You know what the streets look like. You know what the street names are. They normally go from names to numbers. Like, very
abrupt. Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Martin Luther King Boulevard. Then it's First Street, Second Street, Third Street. It's like, they didn't even bother to give them names. It's like, it's all like, you know, a lot of comedians have made these tropes before, but you know where you are. So players know, like, okay, listen, they don't live in the hood when they play basketball in these cities. They live where the places are heavily policed and the riffraff is held at bay as best as possible. But yeah, I don't know if he's talking about players like Jimmy Butler wanna.
For sure.
I don't know where he gets that kind of information from. I think he just says stuff because he thinks it and then he says it out loud.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, you know, saying, hey, he is the world famous, the world renowned, the one and only Mr. Logical. New Jerusalem's in the building. You know what I'm saying? Don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
You know what I'm saying? We got game 6 of the NBA Finals on Thursday. We'll be back on Friday. We'll see if OKC closes it out. On Tuesday, we're going to talk NBA draft because we got the draft next Thursday. And then the week after that, you know what's coming, don't you? It's time to start talking football. It's time for free agency and all
that. Everybody does.
So, I am 2-5. Thank you for viewing. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your comments, being here for us. We are here for you because we love you. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate. Do all the free things. Do all the good things with your liquid death in your hand. Peace.